Welcome, everybody, to episode 5 of WP Mainline for Thursday, July 29th, 2021. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John, actually reunited with John James Jacoby.
Hello.
To talk about the news of the week. And yes, we are doing this on a Thursday because my co-host, boy, he's real special now. He works at Sandhill Developments and they have 4-day work weeks. So wow, he's not available on Fridays.
You don't sound bitter about that at all. Not a single bit. Sorry.
Welcome back, John.
Just don't want to work on the day off, you know. Sorry about that. Big deal.
Come on, man.
Welcome
back, sir. It's glad to hear your voice and a lot of people are going to be glad to hear us both back on the show.
I think I will speak on behalf of all of our listeners that everyone's happy to hear you back. On the airwaves, lots of feedback on the internet and the Twitters, and everyone misses you. So it's good to see you back behind the microphone, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
That is so kind of you, sir. And actually, we'll get into it a little bit later in the show. But so we're going to dive right deep into it right off the bat here. And in fact, so we're going to talk about a tweet that's beginning. A lot of conversation in the WordPress world, a tweet that you responded to, and even your tweet, your response is getting a lot of feedback on Twitter. And the gentleman who actually tweeted this out is actually on the show today, Chris Wigman. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff.
Well, this makes you 2 for 2 on being mentioned on WP Mainline, which puts you almost at co-host category.
Oh, God. If it's three, is this a 3 strikes and I'm out system? Or...
No, 3 strikes and you're on. For those who don't know, Chris Wigman, way back in the day, he created the what was the name of the security plugin before it was iTheme Security?
Better WP Security.
Yeah, Better WP Security. Then it turned into iTheme Security, and that got acquired by iThemes. And you've been working with WP Engine, and you're pretty much give us a little bit of background on what you do on a daily basis.
Sure. I actually just switched teams about a month ago. I had been on the e-commerce team, I was originally hired for DevKit, which was our local development, until we bought Flywheel. So once they bought Flywheel, they canceled DevKit and I went over to the e-commerce team.
And this is for WP Engine, right? You're employed by WP Engine. Okay.
Exactly. And then about a month ago, I switched over to the Atlas team, which is our headless product. So I'm working on a plugin called Atlas Content Modeler, which is something akin, very similar to a early stage of like an ACF type product. Very, very heavily geared toward headless users.
And headless is like one of the topics that's been talked about here recently and within the past year. I don't know if it's a trend or if it's just one of those newfangled things that people are in love with. I mean, my understanding of headless is that no WordPress in the back and WordPress in the front, or how does that work?
Did you just describe the mullet of WordPress? Is that what just happened?
I don't know.
Business in the front.
I was thinking of that, you know, business in the front, party in the back, or party in the front, business. I don't know.
But Jeff, I missed you so much.
That's where I was going with that. Exactly.
I love it. You're right. It's JavaScript on the front. I look at it as Atwood's Law personified in WordPress, but there's a lot of use case for it. Are you familiar? Have both of you heard Atwood's Law?
Describe it for our listeners.
Sure. Atwood's Law says anything that can be built in JavaScript will eventually be built in JavaScript.
Oh,
it's perfect. That's very funny. Very totally accurate.
So the tweet that you said that's beginning a lot of play on Twitter, and I'll read this off, it says, "The deeper I get with modern WordPress dev, the more I understand why newer devs don't like to work on it. This is not the same project as it was in the past. The learning curve is now extremely high, regardless of past experience." And so far, you've gotten a lot of responses through a variety of people on this tweet, including John. And by and large, from what I've seen, it looks like a lot of people are in agreement with your sentiment. Now, there's a couple of cases in here from some folks saying that actually it's a little bit easier because they're just getting started, or maybe they're coming to grips with how Gutenberg works and the blocks and JavaScript. But before we dive into this, I want to mention that, you know, it was about 6 years ago that Matt Mullenweg gave the WordPress ecosystem a homework assignment, and it was three words: learn JavaScript deeply. And that was because from that point on, what we knew with Gutenberg and how it was going to be based on JavaScript and how the future of WordPress was pretty much going to be mostly JavaScript, not so much PHP and CSS as it used to be. We knew back in the day when this news came out that the barriers to entry, this is one of the concerns that was expressed years ago for WordPress, that it was going to create barriers of, it's going to be a lot more difficult for people to contribute to WordPress, especially through JavaScript. And it seems like, you know, in this transitional phase that WordPress is in still, a lot of developers are having problems. It's difficult for them to contribute to WordPress or even work or build things in JavaScript on top of WordPress. So Chris, you're the one that tweeted this out. Give us the background information. Maybe you can expand upon your tweet.
Sure. I mean, I go back to my own experience. I got into WordPress largely because the barrier of entry was very low. I was a student. I wanted something to put on my resume. I had need for plugin features where I was working in my own sites. So I started building that security plugin. This was 10 or 15 years ago. And you used to hear a lot of stories like this. Syed Balki was trying to learn English. So he started building with WordPress on WP. I always get WP Beginner and 101 backwards. So if I get it wrong, I apologize.
Yeah, it's WP Beginner.
And, you know, how he had built that. Pippin with, you know, started just building plugins and stuff like that. Now there's Sandhills Dev. All kinds of folks that had gotten into it largely because the barrier, you know, it was something we could fiddle more with, and eventually just became a business. Today, when I talk to folks, you know, whether it be WordCamps or some of the talks I still give online or meetups online, the perception is very different, at least from a dev point of view. It's not the thing that you just pick up and fiddle with and start building a product that's going to hit 2 million people in a couple of years. It's more, you know, if you're at a company, you may be paid to learn it, but there's a lot more to learn these days. And that's really what I was getting at with it. It's not something that you can just pick up, tweak, and be successful with very quickly. It's something that's going to take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people I'm seeing more successful are often the ones that are already senior level in development and engineering, more so than the folks that are just picking up, you're just learning to code for the first time. It's a very different paradigm than it was before the transition split, however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the responses was like from Chris Howard, and he says, WordPress used to be a wonderful entry into coding. You could start small and grow. He says many started with simple content display extensions. Now with this very high level of entry, learning React and NPM package management, the block editor killed off so many would-be new WordPress devs. And Matthias Ventura, who spent a lot of work as one of the main developers on Gutenberg, chimed in on this Twitter thread, this conversation. His response to that was, quote, respectfully, I think this misses the fact the barrier to tinker is lowered in some regards with things like patterns and block themes. A user can discover how parts of WordPress work by playing with the query block and then sharing a composition in the patterns directory, end quote. So I think what he's trying to say is you can create these block patterns in Gutenberg now, and you could submit them to there's a block pattern directory that's available, and you can kind of do all this without really touching code. You do it all within like the block editor and whatnot. So in some ways, I guess that makes it easier for people to contribute to WordPress. But I've been reading the responses, and it seems like a lot of people who have at least tried to build static blocks have found out that it's been a real pain in the rear. That it seems like everybody has switched to dynamic blocks.
Well, I mean, that's a whole, we could do a whole episode, right?
Yeah,
the technology and where Gutenberg picked off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're necessarily, where the PHP side, the content management of what we're creating in Gutenberg never kept up. Elaine was going on it today on a thread following my post where they were really going into the weeds of that, but that's a technical problem. Really, all I was, I mean, there, we could go on, that thread could, it did go in 100 different directions. I'm sorry, I'm trying to find the right way to put this all back together. And really what I was just trying to get at is it's a fundamental difference in how WordPress was viewed. And when I first started devving, it was actually our main site at the university was Drupal. And I had built a couple Drupal modules. Sorry, it's been a long time at that time, and tried to submit them to the Drupal.org. And the amount of pushback you'd get, you didn't do this for, you know, this blah, was insane. Only to be hit. And had I gotten those through, every major version of Drupal, you have to rebuild your product, because every major version of Drupal, at least up through 8, was a completely new content management system for all practical purposes. WordPress, it was like, oh, I can build this. I can keep iterating on it. And yes, there are problems associated with that technically. The bad reputation WordPress gets for security, our first in-person meeting with your derogatory word, because I was a hell of a lot less, I did crash a lot of websites. I was a hell of a lot less experienced with it. When was that? 8 years ago, I think. That would have been 2013, I guess. But it's you don't have that avenue to come up through things now. Everything has to be, it takes a senior dev to really be proficient. These plugin houses that we're seeing, you know, being bought up by hosts, and that the folks that are building them cost a lot more money for these companies to maintain. So it's really just an interesting paradigm on how less developer friendly for that type of development. Now, I get the WordPress automatic, you know, it's easier to create content. That seems to be, you know, I look at WooCommerce. Well, we don't intend it for large stores. And I look at the arguments around Gutenberg. Well, we don't intend it for this or that. That's great, but it's also been the strength of WordPress that's where we started seeing things like EDD get built. We started seeing things like WordFence get built. We started seeing things like LearnDash get built. The list goes on. And to build a product of EDD quality, LearnDash quality, WordFence, any of these large products is a hell of a lot bigger endeavor than it was 10 years ago. And there's a lot of reasons for it. But just to know the technical stack is a big barrier to prevent somebody from trying these days.
And John, you responded to his tweet by saying, it sucks big time. It's not fun. It's not better or easier, or more accessible. It's a hostile takeover via friendly fire. And I'm really, really depressed about it. And I was so excited to hear about how depressed you are about it today.
I know it fuels your fire, Jeff, to hear how sad and depressed that I am in my life. I'm grateful to have you as a supportive friend that you are. Really, really warms my ice cold heart.
Well, you know, I was trying to get you to laugh, but you're making me laugh. I'm not going to complain about that. But so give us a little bit of background info about, you know, how you feel about his tweet and where Chris is coming from.
Well, I mean, that was like Chris alluded to, the problem as I see it anyways is a very multifaceted one. It is
of course
it is a technical, there are, of all of the technical problems that there are, then there are the human problems, and then there is the perception of the project problem, and then there is all of the sort of backwards compatibility problems, accessibility problems, the usability problems. Like, it just is, and that's not even developing for it really, truly. And so, like, when Chris tweeted it, it was sort of came at a time where, like, I've been trying to write a blog post, like, for work for a while. And every time I have to open up, like, the post editor to try to write content and upload images and make a post happen, I can't do it. Like, and that, like, really freaks me out, because normally, you know, I really enjoyed blogging and using WordPress and developing things for it. And it's a very weird feeling to, like, open up the post editor that I'm supposed to like, I guess, right? Like, we're supposed to be supportive and rah-rah and, like, push the thing forward and and believe the lie that like this, this is great and everything. And I get that, like, there is a time and a place for that. And maybe that's what we should all be doing. It's just like zipping our lips and keeping up with like, yeah, Gutenberg's the future and we've all got to just deal with it. But like, I really strongly dislike it, and it like actually negatively impacts my ability to write content in the thing that I like have enjoyed contributing to for like the greater portion of like my adult career and where I feel like I've like found a second home. So like,
so if you wanted to make Gutenberg better, if you wanted to contribute to it, do you think I think you're a pretty smart guy. You've been around the block. You've been around the Gutenberg block a few times. But how difficult do you think it would be for you to contribute, let's say, a JavaScript improvement to a Gutenberg library or to a block? Do you think you could do it?
No, I honestly don't think I'm qualified to do it, frankly. Like there's so much in motion. And there are so many, I mean, I call them problems, but like they may not be for other people, but like there are so many problems, and the stack to me is so, it makes so little sense that I don't know where to even kind of start to figure out what to do. And so like, I think like the simplest way to put it, which Chris sort of alluded to, is that like the wonderful thing about WordPress in the early days of it and is that it was all just like, it wasn't compiled. So you didn't have to try and like use different sort of advanced-ish tooling to try and decompile a bunch of PHP or like sort of bespoke JavaScript files to figure out what was going on. Like it was relatively simple to drill down or look at a theme or look at what was going on in WP admin, like search all the code base for the thing you're looking for, find it and go like, oh, well, this is the problem with it. And like one of the four freedoms of the GPL that allow us to change these files, it felt very free. Like this is a file that I can edit because it is just a file sitting there that has nothing special going on to it. But I feel like once we have in brought in all of the sort of like modern JavaScript compilation tools, not just WebKit, not just React, not just the sort of general approach of all those things, but like all of it together, like on top of WordPress, on top of the multiple teams that are working on all the different components for Gutenberg, and like the roadmap sort of not as super obvious or clear as I feel like it should be. And maybe this is all just because I'm not trying or looking hard enough, but at the same time, I feel like I do know where to look and I don't really find it. And so how will someone who doesn't know where to look, who doesn't know how WebKit works or how Webpack works, how do they open up Gutenberg, find the code, figure out where it lives in the JavaScript map, try and open up that one specific file, edit that file, recompile Webpack back down, and then get it uploaded or put it in a place where they can test it without like somewhat relatively proprietary development tools for doing it the right way that WordPress and Gutenberg both expect for it to be done. Because if you don't do it the right way, whatever your pull request or your patch or whatever is going to be is not going to be right. And it has to be code formatted correctly. You have to sniff everything correctly. Everything has to be set up in a way that is like very difficult to contribute. And each one of those problems is a problem. It is a barrier to contributing. And so unless you live in it all the time, all day, every day, it is the barrier to entry to getting like people talk about your time to first byte on a website. And I feel like there's an equivalent of like time to first edit when you're contributing to open source. Like how quickly can I change this code and show that it's better? And each one of these things that is in Gutenberg has put up like an extremely tall hurdle that it takes a very high level of comprehension and experience to jump over. And there are dozens of them. And so not like, it's one thing to just like consider yourself an experienced software engineer that is maybe capable to do it. But what if you're not an experienced engineer? What if you're blind? What if you don't have dexterity in your hands to navigate files easily, and you have to try and navigate through 30 different files to find one JavaScript file that needs to be recompiled? Like, each one of these things has made it so incredibly difficult just to make an improvement that it is unattractive. And in my opinion, like, that's the biggest problem, is that WordPress was previously attractive to make changes to. Like, people would be like, yeah, I can just help make it better. And people accept my patch and I feel really good about it. But now, like, trying to get anything changed in Gutenberg, unless you are like one of the cool kids, it does not work. It is not a good experience. And then even if like you are and it does get accepted, it might be years before anything actually gets fixed. And so it's all the same old problems of WordPress, worse, and all the stuff that made it awesome, gone. And so, like, because this happened with a bunch of other like sort of longtime contributors, employees of Automattic, led by Matt, like, it feels like a hostile takeover via friendly fire. Like, these are people that are friends that were on the same team, like, same team, y'all, same team, but like, there are bullets flying, and every single one of them, like, only hurts. It, like, every single one of these barriers hurts. And so when I look at Gutenberg and I'm like, man, why does this menu click open? Like, how do I close a menu? How do I, like, why is this tooltip hovering above a button? And now I can't click the button because the tooltip won't go away. Like, everything that is in Gutenberg feels broken. And so, like, for me personally, like, it's like having every single one of my teeth feel loose. Like, it hurts because I'm like, I don't know what to do about all these problems. Like, there is so much that I feel like is wrong that it feels impossible to make right.
Okay. So I'll ask Chris this. How much of all of this, I mean, WordPress is in a transitional phase. We're moving from the old days of CSS and PHP, which mostly is what WordPress was comprised of in terms of contributions. Nowadays, it's a heck of a lot more JavaScript. How much of this sentiment or what's going on is just a bunch of old hat WordPress developers disliking change, disliking that they have to learn all these newfangled things to get involved? Or is it really that difficult?
It's both. Let me give you my own story. I fought Gutenberg hard when JTrip says it didn't work. Literally, I gave away a computer I had bought a little while before Gutenberg came out that I intentionally bought just for writing because it simply could not handle Gutenberg. Full stop. So when it says it didn't work, I mean, there are just even the hardware requirements. That was a $200 Chromebook, so it wasn't a fancy computer. It really was more expensive. On top of that, the big thing I see with us folks who have been in it a while, now I have been typecast. Even in a, you know, I work for WP Engine, which is WP in the name, but WP development has not been a historical strong point within our engineering division. In fact, it's often considered, you know, the number of people I have to say, oh, well, you came from the WP world. You can only do, you're a front end dev, and that's all you're even remotely capable of. You're not a real engineer. I've gotten that sentiment many times to the point where this current job, I finally said, fuck it. I'm sorry, pardon my French, but I switched into a team that's building on WordPress again, simply because this will probably be my last true engineering role before I jump into like an, you know, I've been putting off the management type things ever since I last did management in the universities because I enjoyed dev work. And I'm hitting the point in my career where A, management's probably the next logical step anyway. And I'm historically been fairly good at it. But B, I'm looking at this. I'm like, okay, I'll learn this. And it's not that horrible for me to learn, but I'm not the only person on my team coming into this. We have new devs that were front-end devs who are learning the WordPress side of things. is ridiculous, you know, very, very difficult. On this plugin we're building right now, we have three test suites, PHP, Unit, Jest, and Codeception. We have two sniffers, PHP and JavaScript. The list goes on. There's a lot going on there. To learn every one of those tools to the point where somebody understands them, you can see the difference with, I've been an engineer for 10 years coming onto this team, and I'm picking up things fairly quickly because of all that tooling, versus some of the guys that are coming on the team that haven't been an engineer that long and are like, whoa, this is a hell of a lot of things to learn. And you really can, it does take a more senior level person to be able to step back into WordPress at this stage. The technicals are a whole other story. I mean, I'd love to do an episode with y'all on just PHP is completely forgotten. And we've just decided that instead of managing content, let's just shit everything into post content, leave it alone, and let the client do everything. But that's a whole, I mean, probably do a whole series of episodes on that.
So WordPress is in.
Sorry. So you said the your original question was, is this just us old farts being old farts? Or is there really a new barrier of entry? It's a little bit of both. For us old folks, we're seeing technical problems that we can no longer help drive. And that does get terribly frustrating. But I am watching so many new people who can't even get involved at all.
Right. And I'm clearly in the same bucket of people, like with Chris, where people are gonna point and look at me and say, like, I'm an old guy who's in it from a long time ago, and I just don't like the change, and I just am being confrontational, or I'm just sort of being dramatic about it, and all those things. Like, those are they are dismissive statements that are very easy for people who do not want to actually acknowledge the problem to say. And so the people who think that, like, I'm just like, I run beta on everything. Like, I am an early adopter, and I want change. I like and prefer the newest, best change. Like, I run the Gutenberg plugin on my blog because I want to know, I want to see it. I want to watch it improve, and I am hopeful. When it comes to Gutenberg, I am only disappointed and like shocked that what is happening is actually really happening. And like, it is hurtful to just be labeled an old crabby, not like change guy. It is hurtful to see all this attention going into a piece of software that is like anecdotally very frustrating. And like, I feel like this was an experiment and it has failed. Like, that after this many releases in years, it is not a good one. So,
in that realm, and to kind of wrap it up on this topic, WordPress is past, we're past the point of no return now. I mean,
this
Gutenberg is the way, JavaScript is the way. In fact, we just, you know, WordPress 5.8, we've now redone the widget management screen. It is now widgets under our blocks. Eventually, we're going to get to full site editing, or everything's going to be a block and you're going to be able to manage it. So we're past the point of no return. I will say that there are like boilerplates out there, Gutenberg boilerplates that will set up an environment, set things up for you that should make it easier to at least create blocks, maybe even contribute JavaScript or some fixes back into WordPress. But since we're past the point of no return, and this seems to be the path that we're on, what do you guys have in terms of suggestions or ideas on how these processes can be approved upon? Or maybe we're just stuck in a certain time period where we got to wait till everybody makes these boilerplates and these tutorials on how to contribute to WordPress. And maybe 2, 3, 4 years from now, things are back to maybe where they used to be, where it's not that hard or difficult to contribute back to WordPress when it comes to JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll start, but I'll try to make it quick. Is like the individuals, the contributors that have built up all of this tooling in WordPress need to write clear documentation on how to set up a development environment. Full stop. Like, because none of the docs are updated the tutorials that you find do not work. They are not platform agnostic, so they are different if you're running on Windows or something else. Like get all of those tools up to date. You still have to use some weird old version of PHP Unit that interacts and supports some version of some other, what I forget what all the problems are. Doesn't matter. Like all of those individual tools are, and then like the core development environment, it doesn't, I couldn't get it working either. And so like even trying to follow the official instructions, they did not work. And so like the days of just being able to sort of spin up your own stack are very, very gone. And so contributing to Gutenberg or WordPress core, there is no straightforward way to do any of that. And like that needs to be updated and brought up to speed before anything else can happen. Because right now, the people that can patch core are the people who have always had a working updated setup environment. But a lot of the folks that set up the tools of they're not setting up tools anymore. And so from that on, my closing statement is it's kind of not super great to be sort of labeled, right? Like to, and so I get that. I said a lot of probably not super nice things about how I feel about Gutenberg in this episode, but that they are not insults, and they are not intended to be sort of hurtful to anyone or any specific people other than like it's not working, and like it needs to work for anyone to make it better. And the only thing that I can do that I thought of myself at this point is literally to do what I think other people have already done, which is like record myself trying to use it. Like I'm trying to write a blog post. This is what I'm clicking on. This is what I expect to happen. This is what happens instead. And like, am I just using it wrong? Am I holding it wrong? Am I just a dumb old guy? Maybe, but maybe I'm not. And maybe these are actual legitimate improvements that should be made. And so accept the feedback, try just move. All I can try and do now is move the ball a little bit forward. Because,
oh man, check out this deal on Amazon. BOGO on old walking canes. Comes with a horn.
Thank you. It's good. Good. Is it tennis balls on the bottom of it?
Yes.
Soften the blow so my wrist doesn't get sore. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I got. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Chris, put a bow on this.
Yes.
I'm not as hostile to Gutenberg as a whole. Frankly, I have no problem with the new editor. Yes, I had to get a new computer for it. I don't know if that would still be the case because it has improved performance-wise. Two things I'd like to see. One is the only thing the core team seems that's in front of their face at all is new features for Gutenberg, full stop. I think there's a lot of folks that would like to solve the technical problems in the back end, data storage, filtering. I mean, there's a list a mile and a half long. Those are usually the old farts, because we came into it. A lot of us were more back end level developers. When I was leaving WordPress, I went to Golang instead of learning JavaScript. I love working on it, but there's a whole lot of other problems besides just brand new features for Gutenberg. And I see an awful lot of fatigue because things are proposed and just completely ignored. Or worse, why would you ever want to consider fixing something that isn't part of Gutenberg? So acknowledging that there are other things that can be contributed to besides just brand new features in Gutenberg, I think would go a long way to helping folks, as well as encouraging. I don't know how they're going to do this. I think that the core group needs to be broken up and changed some for both of these, but encouraging the training, encouraging the documentation, putting more emphasis on things to help on the Gutenberg side, people get involved. Because right now I've seen folks like Deborah Edwards and Noro and others, where's the documentation? And some of the replies are just snarky, like, why would you expect us to document type things? And that's been happening for a couple of years now. So a focus on the training, and Courtney Robertson, Deborah, there's a whole lot of folks that would love to get more involved in that. And then to expand it, where the only thing, you know, we're not just pushing new every release, but starting to acknowledge that, hey, WordPress is still the content management system. Let's try building up that base a little bit too, because there's a lot of improvements that can be made that can make use of a whole lot of folks, both old and new, to push things forward. As an editor itself, I fought it at first. Like I said, I was so mad when I bought a new computer, I switched my whole site to Hugo. Hugo is a static blockchain.
I remember that.
Built on Go.
I remember that.
That lasted about a year. And then I switched with working for WP and show up. Maybe this isn't my best choice. So I came back to WordPress. It works. I don't mind. I actually kind of enjoy writing it. I can do so from my iPad or my computer. It works. But there's a whole lot of things I think that contributions can be accepted. And right now, if anything that's not just brand new, if it's not a front end Gutenberg idea, it's not worthy of anybody's time in core, it seems like. We need to break up that mentality. We need to get, I don't know if that it's going to take new fresh blood. I don't know what it's going to take, but something has to give on that, I think, to make it friendly to a range of folks. And that's not just developers. That's users, I think, that'll improve. That's site admins. That's these large sites with large content, large amounts of content. There's a whole lot of things there that I think could benefit from an expansion other than all we care about is the front-end editor.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens. I'm no developer. I don't tinker deep within WordPress, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. Chris, I know you got a busy time ahead of you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show and expanding upon your tweet. And we'll see what you say for this week and next week. Maybe we'll get you back on.
Sounds good. Always love to chat with you too. I appreciate you having me today. Thank you.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your day and stay alive down there in Florida. Watch out for Florida, man.
Will do, guys. Take care, gentlemen.
Take care.
See you, Chris.
So getting back to a little bit about the beginning of the show, John, I was actually curious about this. So Sandhills Development, the beginning in the summer, started up an experiment to see how it would go, a 4-day work week. So tell us, how is that 4-day work week? Is it 4 days, 10-hour shifts? You get Fridays off. What do you think about it? And is it, what has, I've seen some people say that there's some great things about it, and there's some other things that take some getting used to. So how has your experience been with it?
I mean, my experience has been only positive.
I'm not.
And so this is, the concept of a 4-day work week is like so hot right now. Right. But, I forget who within the company last year, maybe even 2 years ago, it's started down the road of thinking about what a 4-day work week would look like. And it came up a lot, and every summer or so we'd sort of have the discussion again, like, is this something we want to try and do? And so all the partners came together and came to the conclusion that this summer, this American summer, this Northern Hemisphere summer, that we would give it a try. And so we have some employees, Lisa and Andrew, that live in New Zealand, who are experiencing 4-day work weeks during some of their less pleasant seasonal weather. But for those of us experiencing summer, I think we're all taking advantage of it pretty well. So the way we're doing it is it is essentially just a free day off. We are not expected to make up Friday's 8 hours on Monday through Thursday. And it is intentionally to take the day off. Like, you have a mini vacation every week of 3 days in a row.
So 32 hours a week.
32 hours a week. And as a company, we also, like, together have decided that we do value our time away from the computer for healthy outdoor type endeavors, going on walks. Carrie and I went camping for the first time. I mean, in, you know, a long time. And so it's one of those things we wouldn't have been able to have done on a regular Saturday, Sunday weekend. We needed that Friday to drive up to where we were going to get settled in. And it's the went on a weekend camping trip. And so it's stuff like that, that like, you have employees that are, that are nomadic, that live and work, in a truck with, a camper on the back of it and have tricked it out pretty cool. And other employees are putting together some container homes on their property. And they've got an extra day in the week to work on the house. And so you share pictures of progress on what it is that you're able to accomplish with your extra Friday. And like, it's all these quality of life things that, that you don't, there's literally no other way to make up the time other than just taking the day off. And so we also have like a minimum vacation policy that, we do try our best to, politely influence folks to take time off and say,
out of the many vacation policies, I think that's probably the most sensible, probably the best one is a minimum. At the minimum, we expect you to take this much time off.
And the most recent change that, that the partners made, which is a small one, but I think is sort of an important detail, is that on our, we still have, we use Sugar Calendar for our time off calendar. And you put in a request using the like front end submissions add-on that we've got. And so as an employee, you go to the PTO calendar, you enter your time that you want to take off, and then you just enter it and it's in there. And now everyone knows that you've got PTO. And so what we did is we just removed the description box from that PTO request. Like there's no reason, you don't need to submit a reason to take time off. Like it's, you know, whatever the reason is, you are just trusted that it is time that you need to take and prioritize. And if it's a mental health day, if it's you appointments, if it's you just don't want to work that day, whatever it is, you don't have to put the reason in. You just submit your request. And unless there is something that is extremely urgent, then there's sort of no real question about why you need the time off and whether or not there is value in taking it. So I think the hardest, the team that has it the hardest within Sandhills is the support team, but they have been taking it completely in stride. And so, frankly, have Sandhills' customers. The support team has posted hours on each one of the projects that on the support pages that say when support is open from 9 until 5, Monday through Thursday, and put up a notice that says that we are out or closed the Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And so they come to work, they arrive on a Monday morning with a few more tickets in the queue because there's a day that normally they would do tickets that they're not anymore. And so it's different for the support team because their workload never stops.
Hey, no one's pushing a development on or production on Fridays because everybody's off.
Right. And so I think for the creatives in the company, it is probably an unfairly easier to like turn your creative brain off for an extra day and sort of welcome and developers, marketing, designers, folks that have set their own pace and their own expectations on deliverables, but support it never stops. And so they knew that going in, and the Carrie, who leads the support team, had a meeting with them and ask them how they felt like they would be the most comfortable. Some folks wanted to work on Fridays, some folks wanted to work on Mondays, but in the end, everyone just decided like, let's all just take the same day off. Let's just see what happens. It's an experiment. And if it goes wrong, we can always adapt and change. And so far it has been basically fine. It has been totally okay.
I think it's awesome that you're doing that. The part of the experiment is, you're working 4 days, but it's 32 hours. You know, anywhere else that offers 3-day weekends or 4-day work weeks, you're going to have to make up those 8 hours to get 40. Right. So you're doing 4 10-hour days, which you're going to need every little bit of those 3 days off to recuperate.
Right. And so I think that is like the the hope, everyone is hopeful, and I think that it is working, is that when you know that you have a limited time to get things done, like I only have 4 days this week where I can accomplish what I need to get done, is that your quality of work improves during the periods of time where the limited period of time that you have to accomplish your goals. And so I always used to say that, like, I got way more work done on an airplane than I did like sitting at a contributor day, because at contributor day, I'm having so many conversations with people at a WordCamp and talking about things, and that is work and it is progress. But me on a plane with no internet and just like coding away at solving problems felt like I had 3 hours to get something done. I wasn't going to be able to touch it again for a while. I had to power through it. And so it's sort of that feeling for me anyways, just gets sort of layered on top of a regular work day. And so I wake up and say, like, I have a lot I have to do today. And so I've got to plow through some stuff, or maybe I don't have as much going on. And so I get to go back on some long-term projects and make a little bit of progress. And so, but the added day off, if you're thinking about doing it and somehow I'm the person that you're going to listen to, you should absolutely strongly consider having a 3 day work week if you can do it. Cause it's a
4 day,
a 4 day work week, 3 days.
I'll take
off.
3 days.
3 days
yeah,
off.
3 days.
Yes.
Sweet.
3 days. Yes. Yeah. The 3 day work week is, that's the new 4 day work week. Next year, we're going to be talking about 3 day work weeks. It's awesome so far.
So I guess we'll have to see if the experiment is just for the summer or if this becomes an all year thing.
That's what we're talking about, right? Is it's currently just for the summer, but I,
well, once it goes personal, away, you folks are going to be like, oh boy, that was so nice.
Probably. I hope it stays around. I hope it works. I hope everyone's happy. I hope that we have enough data to support.
Maybe Sam Hill's development can start a trend and this is going to be the new cool thing. And nope. Cause it used to be those dumb, but people thought awesome at the time, vacation policy. Well, we have an unlimited vacation policy, which is BS. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to take an unlimited vacations because you'll get fired like on your second week, probably. But these minimum vacation policies, I think, is awesome. And then maybe more the bigger style agencies and WordPress companies can start implementing 4 day work weeks. That would be cool.
Totally.
That sounds like an awesome perk to me.
Well, we took a pretty holistic approach. Like, we looked at revenue, we looked at a number of employees, we looked at just general who was checking in on what days in Basecamp, and like what were we shipping when.
And I think it's nice how the whole company kind of got involved in this experiment, it sounds like.
Totally. Yeah, everyone put their feedback and input in and their concerns, and we really did try to document all of it and put it in a place so that when the experiment, when it's time to determine, did this work or didn't it, that we can look back at what we had thought and see whether what we hope to achieve, like milestones that we had set during the summer that we still want to ship software. We still want to do marketing. We still want to do we still have projects we're trying to ship. So did we do them? Were we able to do them? We have ways to measure most of that stuff. And so hopefully it feels good in like every possible way. And so, I hope we keep doing it and other companies consider doing it too.
So WordCamp US, guess what? They're coming back. There wasn't a WordCamp US last year because of the pandemic, but they are coming back this year. Mark your calendars. October 1st, 2021, WordCamp US will be virtual. It'll be online only, so which means it will be free. And there's going to be it'll be a one-day event with networking opportunities, speaker sessions, workshops, and more. And within the next month, they're going to make a call out for speakers, sponsors, volunteers. They're going to have some posts and some news and provide more information. So you can keep in touch with that at us.wordcamp.org to find out what's going on. And we're in July, August, September. So, you know, within a few months here, they're going to have to put everything together. But with it being a virtual conference, one-day event, I think it'll be no problem.
I think so too. Coming up fast, but WordCamp US, even online, is super fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
So one of the topics that Malcolm and I talked about in one of the previous episodes of the podcast was kind of our thoughts on when will in-person WordPress events, specifically meetups and WordCamps, happen? And if so, you know, are we excited to go to them? Will we go to them? And there has now been a proposal of some new guidelines that are out for discussion and conversation on how to return to safe in-person WordCamps. And you can see this on the Make WordPress Community site. And we'll have links to all these posts in the show notes. But I thought it was a cool flowchart that they have, which kind of indicates, you know, do you meet this criteria, then do this. If you meet this criteria, then do that. Some of the things that are in the proposal that are up for further discussion things like food. There will be no buffets. If food is provided, it will be in individual portions, like box lunches. Capacity, limit in-person attendance or seating capacity to allow for physical distancing, or host smaller events in larger spaces based on your local regional health guidelines. Things like accessibility, inclusion, sessions should be uploaded to WordPress.tv to be live streamed when financially possible. And speaking of financial, they mentioned that WordCamps in this transition period will need to be prepared to cover 100% of their expenses in order to happen. And then they talk about, for greater context, the global sponsorship program in 2021 currently does not include WordCamps, and the team currently does not have expectations set for the future of the global sponsorship program. And to me, that one kind of stuck out to me, like, oh no, you know, that now WordCamp organizers are really going to have to be on their game to make sure that they get the funds and sponsorships that they need to cover 100% of the cost. But then as I started thinking about it, they sort of mentioned this, they're actually encouraging organizers to try new event formats. You know, for example, deliver WordCamp content entirely online, followed by an in-person social gathering, activities, outdoor sessions, activities, whatnot. I thought, well, if you combine innovation and basically what it comes down to is that these WordCamps, it's like a reset. Mm-hmm. The pandemic sucked. 2020 sucked. It sucked for so many reasons. But a little bit of a silver lining when it comes to WordCamps is it actually provides like a hard reset where they could stop and say, this is what WordCamps were, and now we have an opportunity to change that around. So what organizers will be able to do now is experiment with different setups and different types of events. And we can, it all has to start back down at the meetup, the local levels again, and get people active and bring those people back, bring those in-person events back. Then you can start doing WordCamps, and hopefully the WordCamps start off small and local. So we're talking about 100 people or less, maybe, depending on the city, depending on the momentum that community has. And I think it's kind of exciting to see how this sort of moment in time transitions the entire WordCamp event or WordCamp concept. And let's see what happens because of this and how event organizers innovate.
I agree. Some of this stuff seems obvious, but it is really important to put this into writing, like the no buffets for food. Like, of course, you don't want buffets for food. I saw you even comment on it. You commented on it. Personally, I'm not eating at a buffet restaurant for at least another year or two. At conferences of a buffet style lunch encourages people to gather in close proximity to each other, whereas box lunches or prepared meals could alleviate this concern. It's like, yeah, of course, like that makes perfect sense. And I agree with the that innovation here is necessary. Like when we did WordCamp East Troy, Wisconsin, we had our 35 attendees. We did it outside. We reversed the days so that we had sessions on Sunday and get to know everyone on Saturday. And we just tried stuff and tried to see what worked and what felt right. And like that is the sort of the best parts of Gutenberg are the experiments, are the trying something that hasn't been done before, to see how it works and then iterate on those things. And so the iteration and the improvements of that with bringing back the in-person WordCamps are important. Like I'm looking forward to seeing so many people at a WordCamp in person again, that I really can't wait to hang out with a bunch of folks. And the global sponsorship program, like you said, is one of those things that when it first became a thing, I was like, oh, that, it never really crossed my mind that a WordCamp couldn't pay for itself. Like, so I was like, oh, that's pretty cool that there is even this like option that you could go over your budget and not be on the hook for paying for, you know, whatever there
yeah,
is there.
Yeah, the whole program was like a kitty, like a pool, and then various work camps or sponsors could pull their money in and pay for specific like packages within the sponsorship program, and then that committee or that group of folks would then divvy out the funds as necessary to the various work camps.
Exactly. And so going back to the original way is, I think, fine. It's probably easier and better for logistically for everyone. So that makes a lot of sense.
So with the innovation of WordCamps or WordPress events, is there any type of event that you would like to see now that maybe that could take place now? Maybe it would have been a little bit more difficult, let's say, 2 years ago?
Kind of like there's like a lot of really cool ideas for events we have had throughout the years that one of them was like a train ride, which I think fits the wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
So to like get everyone on a train from Chicago to Portland or something and like hang out for 3 days your event fully on a train. You've got everything you need and you get to see really cool stuff and you get to hang out with people in a sort of unique environment. I think it would be really fun. I think it'd be neat to do something like that. The idea of like a cruise ship seems terrifying to me. But that was also one of those ideas. It's like, yeah, just get everyone on a cruise ship and hang out and have a good time and have plenty of room and comfort and great views of oceanside, everything. Like, depending on where the ships go, you have cool stops and tourist stuff to do. Like, I don't know. There's just like on the things that are possible in person. Yeah, it's like endless cool opportunities. But I think the one thing that I would really like to see that is technologically challenging still, even in a world that where we all primarily use Zoom, is like really solid support for hybrid attendance and participation. Like actually having, if it's Zoom or any other video recording conferencing participation middleware, like having it be both, like having all the in-person stuff go and be one thing, but have someone or a team of people whose jobs it is to monitor and moderate the remote audience that wants to participate and ask questions and get sort of treated equally, because we talk about remote working and distributed companies and we always say that the people that work in person together always have a leg up, and you always accomplish more and it feels better to be in person. And so we have together like a little bit of an opportunity to change or improve that. And, I think it would be interesting to put some energy towards that experience for folks that want to attend WordCamp Europe, but do not want to take the plane ride that direction. Because I went to the WordCamp Europe in 2019, but being on an airplane is not always my favorite experience. So I know it's not always your favorite experience either, Jeff. So to be able to participate as an equal, I think would be really high value for a lot of folks.
Out of planes, trains, and automobiles, I'm now down to just trains and automobiles.
That's right. I'm not quite there yet, but I feel it in my heart.
So for listeners out there, if you have any cool ideas on what you'd like to see in a unique WordPress event you know, give a shout out to me at WP Mainline on Twitter and share your idea with me, or WPMainline@gmail.com. And we'll read the feedback on next week's episode. There is one other topic I wanted to get into, but I'm kind of not feeling it. I think it's run its course. If you want to read about it, it's on WPMainline.com. I'll just give you the headline. It says, "Air maximum number of white male WordPress podcast hosts exceeded." And if you just go there, read the post, and let me know your thoughts on it, because I don't want to get into it here. I just don't feel it. Maybe next week after I let it simmer for a little bit. I definitely think it's something that has to be talked about and discussed, but I'm just not feeling it today. Maybe on next week's episode. So that's going to do it for this edition of WP Mainline. You can find show notes for this episode and all other previous episodes on WPMainline.com. Just click the podcast link and be sure to follow WP Mainline on Twitter at WP Mainline. And John, where are you at these days? You still on the Twitters?
All the same boring places. Twitter and GitHub at JJJ and JJJ.blog, where I have like 4 posts that are drafts that I just can't bring myself to write. So I guess I gotta find a way to suck it up and blog more. JJJ.blog.
So who we're going to take a poll. By the end of this year, will John be on Classic Press? We're taking bets. Oh. I'm taking bets. All right. So that's going to do it. Everybody enjoy. Have a safe, enjoyable weekend. We'll talk to you again next week. Say bye, John.
Bye.